Hello, I'm Rosie Knight.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Source, the pop culture podcast where we drink Bloody Marys and ruin the stuff that you love.
So let's get to ruining some stuff.
Let's do that.
How are you doing this week, Rosie?
I'm good.
Yeah, you weren't feeling so well the past few days. Are you feeling a little better?
I'm feeling okay. Our house has been like filled with the most gross version of tonsillitis you can imagine. So it's been tiresome, but we're back and we're out of quarantine. And I managed to get some articles done today and I'm doing the podcast. So I'm feeling good. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Been having a little trouble sleeping. So I think that these Bloody Marys may help that along. So. But other than that, I've been great. We have a really good show. We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
We're going to talk about the Joss Whedon Wonder Woman script, despite our better judgment, because I have some things to say, and I've been holding back from tweeting up a tweet swarm about it, so we could talk about it here.
It's going to be the first time ever that we disagree about something.
Yes. It's momentous. But that's okay because we respect each other's point of view.
Exactly.
As far as anyone needs to know. And we're also going to talk about some kind of depressing news, which is this film coming out that Mark Ruffalo? How do you pronounce that?
I pretend it's like Gruffalo, like the Gruffalo. So he's Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo is producing this movie called Anything, and he's cast Matt Bomer, a cis male actor, to play a trans woman. So we're going to talk a little bit about that on our thoughts about that. Before we get to any of that, Rosie, you haven't been feeling well. Are you drinking? You really probably shouldn't be. What are you drinking?
We got a watermelon and we smushed it up in the blender and made watermelon juice. And I'm just drinking that with vodka in it. It's very simple.
I love me some fresh watermelon and vodka.
Yeah.
It's a summer classic. It's so hot out. It's perfect.
Oh, it's very hot. And technically, I think it's like good for me because it's like hydrating me.
Sure. That sounds right. Of course.
Let's pretend that's the case.
It's very plausible. I'm drinking the same thing I was drinking last week, which is this Bloody Mary mix called Lefty O'Doul's. There's so much of it. I bought like 2 fucking liters of it. So I have to drink it. But I did add more horseradish to it this time. Okay. And I also added some Frank's Red Hot sauce.
Nice.
Which is really livening it up. I do not mean to disparage the fine folks at Lefty O'Doul's who make a very good Bloody Mary mix, but I like to put my personal spin on these things.
Yeah, you got to.
So before we get into topics, we do have a little bit of listener feedback to share.
Yay!
We got some reviews on iTunes. I wanted to share one of them, which is by Spacey Babe.
Woo-woo!
I know, great name. Spacey Babe wrote on iTunes, "The sauce is so good. 2 women talking about comics, film, and the stuff that pisses them off is not only entertaining, but great to hear their insightful points of view. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone looking for a good show to listen to."
Oh, it's the best review ever.
Yeah, did you write it?
No.
You didn't? Okay. No, awesome. Whoever you are, Spacey Babe, thank you for the lovely review. Please, everyone, rate us on iTunes and send us lots of reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can read more of them. So, Rosie, did you read or watch or listen to anything this past week that you want to talk about?
It's, like, been a bit of a blur. I'm trying to think if there was anything that particularly stood out. I bought a book from the library that was pretty great. It's, like, a Danish crime thriller called The Hanging Girl, and it's about this, like, diverse team of Danish like detectives. It's a really famous series in Denmark, actually called Department Q, which I didn't realize I'd already watched a bunch of on Netflix because they have a couple of the movies on there. So yeah, it's good. It's spooky, but it's got like a strong female character and stuff, so
that's
very cool.
Very nice. Do you
what about you?
I was just gonna ask, do you like thrillers and that type of— I never read stuff like that.
For some reason, when I was a kid, I just loved murder mysteries and stuff. That was always like, and thrillers. And then I read Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is just like, I would recommend that even if you don't like thrillers, because really it's about like structural oppression and how like women are like institutionalized and like it's just so amazing, and it's got some really cool like bisexual autistic female lead and stuff. So that was the one that really got me onto like the more Scandinavian style stuff.
I should read that. I never have really been interested in murder mysteries. I don't know why. It's just one genre that never particularly appealed to me. I have been watching Better Call Saul.
Oh, yes.
Which the season finale was last night. We're recording this on Tuesday. And it was outstanding. The whole show has been outstanding. The season finale, like, ripped me apart emotionally. I highly recommend this show. Have you watched it at all?
Yeah, we're only like 3 episodes into the newest season though.
Okay. So I find it to be one of the best things I've ever seen on TV. Like I would put it in my top 10, maybe even my top 5 of TV shows. And I'm going to say it right now. I think it's better than Breaking Bad.
I do. I think it's better than Breaking Bad. 1,000 times better than Breaking Bad.
Good. I'm glad you agree with me on that.
It's got incredible characterization. It's got this great slow burn storyline. The female characters are actually like well written and like important. Yes. And also are the moral heart of the show. Whereas with Breaking Bad, Skylar is the moral heart of the show and actually is an incredible character, but the way that they characterize her is that she's this like nagging, whining woman ruining Walt's cool guy drug dealer dream. And I think, I think Better Call Saul is a far better show, especially because it's so intimate.
Yeah, I have a real problem with the whole Skylar character and the way she's treated and the trope in TV shows, particularly where the anti-hero is the main character. And yes, he's doing bad things. And we all know it's wrong, and the wife or girlfriend's role is to tell him it's wrong and object to it. But the problem is that he's cool, and as bad as what he is doing is, we want him to do it, we want him to succeed at it, and she just feels like she's nagging and getting in the way, and I hate that trope. And yes, they don't have that on Better Call Saul.
No.
It's way more complex and interesting. The character relationships are interesting. It's like slow burn, like you said. I just love it. It is thematically coherent. It's thoughtful, but it's also exciting to watch. It's good TV. That's like everything TV should be, in my opinion.
I feel like they're so good at adding like little character nuances, like the brother's electromagnetic illness that's clearly like a manifestation of mental health or whatever. That who would write that? Why did that come up? But it adds so much to the character. It adds like this surreal vulnerability and this like, it builds up such an important power balance between him and Jimmy. And yeah, I think it's great. I agree with you. Everyone should watch that show. So our first topic is that Joss Whedon Wonder Woman script.
That script, indeed. Yeah,
which I'm sure our listeners are probably aware of. It leaked, I think, originally a month ago. I think it has been online before that. And this is I assume it's an early draft, from what I understand, of the Joss Whedon Wonder Woman script, which has been a white whale in Hollywood for a long time. A lot of people have seen it as this amazing thing we never got because of his being known for like characterizing strong female characters and stuff like that.
He wrote it in 2006. And he had just come off of Buffy and... really, he hadn't done any film at that time except for, I guess, Serenity.
Mm.
And so, yeah, people were really excited about having him as the Wonder Woman director. And it didn't work out. The studio dropped the project. So it is kind of legendary. And now there's been some renewed interest in it, of course, because we have a Wonder Woman movie that's well-liked. So people are reviewing Joss's take on the character and the story. And a lot of pretty negative feedback has been slung around. So,
how do you feel about that, Rebecca? I feel like it's justified. But seeing as this is a talk, how do you feel about it?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for giving me a moment. So, okay, look, I do get where people are coming from, but I do think also that a lot of the criticism is misguided. I think it's wrong. I think people are mischaracterizing what's in the script. There are completely valid critiques, and what I'm seeing a lot of, and when I say seeing a lot of, I mean tweets, and then I mean blog posts and articles about those tweets, basically. You see articles on all these different sites, like blog sites, websites. They're all about how, wow, we really dodged a bullet. This would have been a terrible movie. It's so sexist. It's just everything that's wrong with male Hollywood. And then they go on to list the issues. And I find that a lot of what's being listed is not really problematic. And a lot of what really is problematic about the script is getting glossed over or ignored.
Yeah.
So I need to talk about it because people are wrong on the internet. And I can't allow it to stand. Okay? So, all right. I just want to highlight some of the complaints, criticisms that have been levied that I think are misdirected or misplaced. So the first thing that I noticed is that a lot of people are saying that the script isn't even really about Wonder Woman or Diana. It's all about Steve Trevor and that he's basically the protagonist of it. That is not true. And you read it and you know it's not true. I know that we had a conversation about this already. I'm going to speak for Rosie. She doesn't like the character Steve Trevor at all, and she feels like there's too much of him.
I mean, any Steve Trevor is too much Steve Trevor. And I do think that in a film about Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor should be about 2% of the plot. So I think him being 40% is too much. But is there more Steve Trevor than Diana? No, I agree with you. There's not.
Not only is there not more of him than her, but there's significantly less. She really is the protagonist in every respect. She's in, I didn't do a page count, but she's in 12 or more scenes that he's not in at all, or where he's like an extra in the background and has no lines. He's only in 3 scenes that she's not in at all. And in those 3 scenes, he's being damseled. Basically, he's being put in danger so she can come rescue him, or he's talking about her to someone else. He doesn't have his own arc or storyline. He has a goal at the beginning, but by the beginning of Act 2, he's achieved his goal. She has a goal. She has a character arc. She has an adversary that she faces. She is the hero of the story. She's the protagonist of the story in every respect. So I feel like this criticism that it's all about Steve Trevor and focused on him and seen through his eyes, I don't understand where that criticism is coming from. That's not the script that I saw. I've also seen people say that she is not developed as a character, that she's just kind of a cipher. She's just beautiful and there. I didn't find that to be the case. She's shown to be curious, adventurous, bold, compassionate, caring. She has flaws, right? She is kind of arrogant and she's not able to recognize what she doesn't know and has to learn, but that's pretty standard Hollywood. Your protagonist has to have a flaw so that they can learn, you know, when they fail at the end of the second act, they can learn from their mistakes, be renewed, have their second turning point, launch into Act 3 stronger than before. And that's exactly what happens in the script because it's very by the numbers, like Sid Field screenwriting 101 structure. So I didn't think she was like a non-character. I thought she was headstrong and sassy, and I thought there was a lot of character there. I saw some people complaining that Steve is too critical of her or too harsh on her, and a lot of the script is him yelling at her and telling her what she's doing wrong. I felt like that was just sort of part of that standard structure where the companion of the main character is there to tell them what they're doing wrong, and they ignore that person all the way until they hit their low point at the end of Act 2, and then they realize that person was right and they learn something. And he's just playing that role. I know that you felt the language was harsh.
I feel very differently about you, but about this than you. But like, I specifically think in that case, I think if you're writing a Wonder Woman scripture and you put Steve Trevor in it, in my opinion, in brackets at all, but you know, if you put Steve Trevor in it and you have him say the words, "You're not a hero, Diana, you're a fucking tourist," I think that is just some real bullshit. Like, I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan anyway, and I feel like that specific criticism and that, and the thing is, I think in the age of the internet, it's fair for people to just pull that out and say, that's bullshit. They don't necessarily have to have read the whole script, you know, to be able to say that they think that line is cool.
I think you have to have some context. You know, for example, a lot of hay has been made of the stage direction, the way it describes her. And it does.
It is funny, though.
It is funny, but a lot of Hollywood scripts are very objectifying in the way they describe the
female
characters. I know,
but Hollywood is sexist. So I don't necessarily think that, like, it being the same as every other Hollywood
script. Want it to be better. We want it to be better. And that's
It's Wonder
totally
Woman.
Fair.
You know, you'd hope that someone would be aiming for better.
That's fair. But if you take that one description out of context, it seems really objectifying. And it's like, wow, we're just seeing her through, you know, Steve Trevor's eyes, and it's so sexist and so male point of view-y. But then everything that happens after that point is driven by Diana. She is the agent in the script. She's making all the decisions. She's pushing the plot forward. She faces against the villain, and she saves the day in the end. And people are acting like the movie that came out, the Patty Jenkins movie, which was written by men, also,
yeah, it was for men,
doesn't have similar issues in it. In the Patty Jenkins movie, spoiler alert, okay, if you haven't seen it, you might want to listen, you might want to wait and listen to this after you've seen it, because I'm going to talk about the end of that movie. But in the Patty Jenkins movie, Diana doesn't even save the people in the end. Steve Trevor saves everyone in the end.
Steve Trevor.
I know, but it's the double standard that I think I'm seeing. I feel like if you took the Patty Jenkins script as it appeared on screen and gave it to people to read, they would pick it apart and find plenty of lines that are problematic and issues in it that they wouldn't like. Yeah. But because you get the whole experience of watching it on the screen, the whole context, those things become very minor to the point where people aren't even noticing them. Of course, that also goes to the issue of women being so starved for a decent portrayal on screen that we're willing to look past all kinds of shit.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, I think, like, for me, I have a lot of problems with Joss Whedon, and I feel like a lot of people's criticisms of Joss Whedon and this script come from the larger issues that they have with him, and how he's like put on this pedestal as this feminist guy, but then he writes a Wonder Woman script that has a lot of like objectification. It has, you know, Wonder Woman is called a bitch, this kind of really racist tropey drug lordy thing, calls someone else a whore.
There's definitely some racism in it, it's racist,
you know, and that is like always been one of Joss Whedon's problems. You know, in Buffy, he introduces Kendra and she dies, you know, he doesn't, and maybe that's him staying in his lane, but feminism isn't about white women. It's about every woman, you know?
Right.
And I think that's why especially like the racist aspects of the script is like, you can't write a film and say, oh, this is about like women's liberation, or this is about like strong women, but then represent black people in a way that's really racist, because then you're ignoring black women.
Did you hear my alarm?
Oh, did it? I didn't hear it. Did it say the word?
It said drink, bitch.
Which I didn't hear that actually quite well.
That means it's time to wrap it up. Safe to say there are issues in the script, okay? I feel like the biggest issues in the script are bad screenwriting issues that have nothing to do with racism and sexism. It's not the greatest script ever. It has some stuff I really enjoyed, but I don't think it's so terribly sexist. I think that there's an issue where we are so starved for positive representations of women, for strong and powerful women in cinema, on TV, that when one guy comes forward and is like, oh, I'm going to make a teenage girl that can punch people, we're like, oh my God, you are feminism. And it's not fair to any of us. And the better solution would be if we had a variety of representations that we could look at, and we wouldn't have to pin everything on our hopes of a Wonder Woman movie being the perfect movie.
Yeah. And also, it's just an old script. It's easy for people.
It is old. That's true.
Easy to pick out stuff from it.
Yeah.
It's from, you know, like 13 years ago, 11 years ago, you know.
There's all kinds of like anti-sex worker language.
There's
a lot of things that are dated. Yeah.
I feel that the script has been a validation for me for my longtime dislike of Joss Whedon, who I think is a terrible sexist racist person. But but that's just my own personal opinion based on the work that he's put out, that I read it like that. But no, I think it's a good dialogue, and I'm glad that you got the chance to talk about how you feel about it.
And I'm glad you got some chance to give counterpoints, although I didn't really let you get too many words in there.
I think you did a good job.
All right. The next topic is, okay, we're going to talk about this film that Mark Ruffalo is producing called Anything. So the big news is that he has cast Matt Bomer to play a trans woman, and Matt Bomer is a cis man. The plot of the film, as I understand it, it is about a cis man who has a trans sex worker move in next door to him, or he moves in next door to her. I can't remember the exact synopsis, but they sort of develop a friendship. And
sounds terrible.
You know, it sounds awful.
There's always this story where it's like they take the already disgusting, racist, magical Negro trope that Hollywood's been using for 100 years, and then they just replace the black person with a trans person.
Some other marginalized identity, right? Yeah, according to Variety, the unlikely new couple must reconcile their vastly different backgrounds as they fill the void in each other's lives.
Wow.
I mean, great. Okay, so this is an issue which several trans women have been bringing to light for a long time. I mean,
this is something the trans community has been talking about for literal decades. Boys Don't Cry. The most recent one was Jared Leto and his horrifically awful performance in Dallas Buyers Club.
Eddie Redmayne was the more recent one.
Yeah, and I mean, this happens so much, and it's so damaging. And a lot of trans people have come out against it and have spoken about it, and nobody in Hollywood is listening.
Yeah. So the appropriate thing to do, I think, is to look at what trans women are saying about it.
Yeah.
So Jen Richards, who's an actress and trans woman, tweeted a whole bunch about it. She said that she actually auditioned for a role, I think, in this film. And they told her that they were going to cast a cis man. I'm basing this on my memory of her tweets, so forgive me if I'm getting something wrong. But she says that she talked to them, the producers, about why they should not do that. And she made it very clear, like, please don't do this. And, you know, gave very cogent reasons why it's a bad idea. The most prominent one being that it harms trans women.
It does.
Cis men as trans women. It harms them. It perpetuates the idea that trans women really are just men wearing dresses, because that's what the actors are.
Yeah, and the idea that being trans is just a costume.
Yes, it's a role you play, right? And it also, in turn, promotes violence against trans women.
Of course it does.
Because that's the basis for a huge amount of violence against trans women, is the idea that they are lying, that they are deceitful, that they're really men.
It's disgusting. It's like the worst kind of appropriation, because it's dangerous. Yes. They take trans stories. They don't pay trans creators. Trans people are trying to educate them for free, and they're still not listening. And then they won't even cast trans people. And the stories are never really about trans people. There's not just a story about, you know, there's not a romantic comedy that's just about, that happens to have a trans person in it. It's always about a transition, or a trans person who comes into a cis person's life and helps them, like, make their life better. Or, like, in Dallas Buyers Club, Jared Leto in his horrible over-the-top performance was an invented character. They invented him in a story of a real man's life, and the real man was bisexual, and they made him a straight homophobe so that Jared Leto's character could teach him about bigotry. It's so, like, fucked up.
Manic pixie trans girl.
Exactly. Except,
but she has to die.
and it's like, it perpetrates this idea of, like, violence against trans people. It takes jobs away from trans people.
Right. There's a million reasons why it's horrible. Yeah. And what gets me is that after everything, after the conversation surrounding Dallas Buyers Club, and Jared Leto won a fucking Oscar for that, and then Eddie Redmayne played the trans woman and the Danish girl and got nominated for the Oscar for that. And each time there's a conversation and trans women are out there on the front line saying, don't do this. You're taking away jobs from us. You're appropriating our stories. You're telling our stories without us. And you are harming us by perpetuating negative ideas about us. It shouldn't be happening, especially someone like Mark Ruffalo, who's supposed to be
a good guy. Some cool, progressive, blah, blah, blah. He's like a sexy dad who's meant to have like good politics. But it turns out he's just a problematic sexy dad.
Yeah.
Like it's, most dads.
It's just, right? That's, okay. We're not going to dive into those issues right now. But
It's awful.
Shouldn't we be past this? We should be past this. And I can't believe how unable people are to listen. It's so not disgusting. Like trans women aren't there saying this. And they're in Hollywood increasingly, which is great. You know, Jen Richards is getting that audition. She's there. She's able to talk to them face to face. And they're not listening. Why would you want to tell a story of a group of people but not listen to that group of people?
Well, it's historically, it's everything comes from this white, often male gaze. It's the reason that for so many years, the only films you could get made about black people were films about slavery.
Right.
Because those were the narratives. Yeah. I mean, but at least now you've got people, you have like black directors who are telling black stories. You know, even if it's 12 Years a Slave, it's still a story by a black director. If it's, you know, Moonlight, you now have these different hopeful, more open narratives. It's taken a long time. I mean, 7% of people in Hollywood who direct are women. And when you look at the number of people of color or women of color, it's like not even 1%. So it's a little bit of movement. But when it comes to like trans people, trans women, black trans women, you know, you're looking at so little representation that when they do this, it's like, it's so insulting to like, and to also they never, not they would make it better, but like, there's not even an attempt to cast, like, if it's, you should be casting trans people in these roles, but you could cast, if it's a film about trans women, you could cast a cis woman if you really want to cast a cis person, because at least they are a woman. That is who that trans person is. Right. Whereas they perpetuate this idea that it's this dress up game that is always done so over the top and is they make it like a parody of the real trans experience.
Why would you ever do cross gender casting, right? Why would you ever cast a man as a woman? The only reason you do that is because you think that she's not really a woman, right? It just reflects that underlying belief that trans women are not women. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And the thing you said about appropriation is so key. I have a tweet from Shadi Petosky, who's a friend of mine and a producer. She produces animation, and she's really vocal about these issues about representation and about trans people being part of telling their own stories in film and television. She tweeted, "Timeline full of people telling me that trans performers aren't valuable enough for a film, but our stories are. That's appropriation 101.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that encapsulates it so well. It's like, you want to tell these trans stories. You want to exploit them. You want to feel good about yourself as a savior, making everyone have to open their minds and think about how tough trans people have it. But you want to make it your version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You don't actually want to facilitate trans people telling their own stories. You don't want anything authentic.
Yeah, because it's all about telling the story through their eyes. And it's about utilizing people's lives and using them as like a tool to tell your story, which is not the right way of doing it.
Yeah. And Shadi also has a great Facebook post where, this is also from 2015, by the way, so we're already talking about 2 years ago, where she's writing about the Danish girl. And she has this list. She bullet points it. Like, here are the standard cis obsessions with trans women. Trans women are men who as adults are turned on by women's clothes. And she puts in quotations, women's clothes. Then go through all kinds of, look at how hard they have to try process. So they play dress up and pretend to be the shy female misogynistic version of a woman. They do it for a sexual thrill, or they do it to trick other men. Like, these are all tropes you see over and over again. When cis people depict trans people, they show trans people as being pathetic, mm-hmm. being obsessed with what they look like. They show trans people as being victims.
Yeah.
It's like there's a whole world of existence of being trans.
Yeah, and trans experience, you know.
And trans experience, exactly, that doesn't get told. And the reason is that trans people are not being given a seat at the table and an opportunity to tell their own stories. What are you excited about in pop culture that's coming up?
I'm pretty excited about the Spider-Man movie because I love Spider-Man. Throughout my life, I actually think Peter Parker is, like, lame. But, you know, he's a character I've always read comics about, and I feel like there's never really been a good Spider-Man movie. And I hate Tobey Maguire. And, you know, I really loved what they did with Peter in Civil War, where he was, like, actually a teenager, and he was, like, quippy, and he was a fanboy, and he was so charming, and I loved that he lived in a little apartment in New York, not some ridiculously huge house. Like, there was just a lot about it that really spoke to me, and I'm very excited, and the trailers all look really good, and I love Vulture, but also, like, they're just ripping off Miles Morales. So it's this weird double-edged thing in my life where they've introduced Ganke, they've taken direct panels.
For our listeners who maybe aren't so versed in comics, Miles Morales is another version of Spider-Man that exists in an alternate universe, and he's very popular. Yes. He's a teenage boy, and he's what, like, black and Hispanic?
Yeah, he's black and Hispanic, and he did exist in the Ultimate Universe. He was the Ultimate Spider-Man. Now he is main Marvel Universe.
Now he's in the main Marvel Universe. And so some of the scenes we saw in the trailers and some of the characters are clearly taken from Miles Morales' story. So they chose to do Peter Parker again. They chose to make him white, but they took elements of Miles Morales' story, which is kind of a pretty big bummer.
It's unbelievably problematic. I'm hoping, my dream is, from what I've seen, it seems like they cast an Asian girl to play Cindy Moon, who is Silk in the comics, who's another spider character.
Yes.
And then what I'm hoping is that they will introduce within this New York school a Miles character, and they will introduce maybe Kamala Khan, who is Miss Marvel, and basically make this school like this team of young Brooklyn heroes. And if they do that, I can maybe forgive them. But if it seems like they're just going to mine Miles's stories for Peter, it will be disappointing. But for the moment, I'm staying cautiously optimistic. And every time I see the trailers and he's swinging around New York, it does seem very exciting to me.
Yeah. I will say this. A couple years ago, when it was announced, before it was announced this movie was coming out, when the previous round of Spider-Man movies were coming out, it was the second one in the Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield. And I tweeted something like, I can't even imagine, like, if I could tell 15-year-old me that a movie of Spider-Man is coming out and you're not going to go see it. Like, I was like, I've had enough. I've had enough. And then when they announced this one, it was another one like, I can't believe I'm not excited about this movie, but we saw, you know, the Sam Raimi. I liked the Sam Raimi one, the first one.
Oh, me too. I loved it.
I thought it did a really great job of capturing a lot of the essence of Spider-Man, and it was fun, and it was Sam Raimi. The sequels kind of went off the rails a little bit in various ways, but that one was at least quite good. The Andrew Garfield reboot was like, I just didn't quite understand the point of it.
Me neither.
It had
Sony trying to keep the rights. That is sadly, as with so many things, like with Fantastic Four, with Spider-Man, so much of it is they have to make a film within every 8 years to be able to keep the license so that it doesn't go back to Marvel. So that's why these constant reboots happen. And that's what's interesting about Spider-Man, this one being in the Marvel Universe, because that's something. And there's a lot of rumors about the reason, supposedly Sony, in the deal that they signed with Marvel, said that Marvel couldn't do a Miles Morales film for at least three films and stuff like that, because Sony, there's
a rumor.
There's a lot of weird stuff. You can really find a lot of really interesting documents and leaks from the Sony leaked email stuff. Oh. And essentially after that happened, what it looks like happened is that Sony were really failing, and they had a big let's save the world, let's save Sony meeting. And Marvel sent an executive who said, hey, look, we've had our lawyers look into it and we can make a Miles Morales Spider-Man movie, and there's nothing you guys can do about it because legally you don't own Miles Morales, you know? Mm-hmm. And then no one will care about Peter Parker. And supposedly they used that to leverage this deal where Spider-Man would come back into the Marvel Universe, the Peter Parker Spider-Man. So supposedly somewhere in there is, yeah, somewhere in there.
Sounds so plausible to me.
Right. And there's so much wild stuff like that. Like, I really love that businessy side of the superhero stuff. But what's funny is somewhere inside of there, I think there's something with Avi Arad, which there's some kind of thing about how they can't do a main title live action Spider-Man movie, a live action Miles Morales movie, which makes sense because the Hulk have that as well. So Hulk can be in the Marvel universe, but they can't do a Hulk movie because Universal own Hulk.
Okay. I did not know that. I thought they weren't making Hulk standalone movies because the previous ones didn't do well. And Hulk's not a great character.
Exactly really what happened. Because there is a Hulk movie that is in the Marvel Universe that was made in collaboration with Universal, but it didn't really work. And then Universal were like, hey, look, you can use a character, but you can't do a Hulk movie. And that's why the newest Thor movie is essentially taken from a very famous Hulk book called Planet Hulk, but it's called Thor. Because they can't do that. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff
there.
And
it's very interesting.
And it always makes me feel, like, a bit more enamored and, like, also sort of horribly cynical. But it raises my interest. And I'm hoping that they take the chance with Homecoming to introduce other young New York heroes and make some kind of cool team that will work within both. We'll see. So that's sort of my hope.
I really enjoyed his appearance in Civil War. And I am definitely more excited about the Spider-Man than I ever thought I was going to be. Because when I heard that they were going to do another Peter Parker, it's like, I can't watch Uncle Ben die again. I just can't do it.
Which luckily they're not doing.
I know, they're not doing that. So I'm sure I'll enjoy it. I will say, after watching the trailers and TV ads, I'm a little not sure about this designed spider suit that's like all high tech. I don't know how I feel about that. I think, like, one of the things that makes Spidey so cool as a character is that he is kind of scrappy and resourceful, and he doesn't have a super wealthy genius patron providing him with the most high-tech equipment.
This is true. He's like the relatable character.
Right.
He's like the most relatable character in comics. I totally agree. I also have a theory about that as my last theory, which is I think that Tony is going to die. Maybe in Homecoming, maybe not. But I can't understand why else they would.
Spider-Man. He's like the main character.
Yeah, but Spider-Man is Marvel's before the movies, was Marvel's prestige character. They have fought for years to get this character into the Marvel Universe. So why would they make the whole film like a duo with Iron Man, which is kind of how it seems? They've brought back Happy, Jon Favreau's character, and those two were the original Iron Man team, because Jon Favreau... And I think that either in this or in Infinity War, which is the next Avengers movie, Tony will die. There's going to be this new phase of Avengers who have kind of already started to be introduced, Ant-Man, Scarlet Witch, blah, blah. And I also think they'll probably bring back the Fantastic Four. That's my big take. So in a year, we can listen and see if I was right.
We'll see. I mean, I could totally see them doing that. I just assumed they were giving Tony such a big role in Spider-Man just to drive home, like, this is a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
They just put their stamp on it, bring it into the universe, incorporate it. Because Spidey really, he's not a team character. He's a kind of a street level hero, despite being the sort of flagship hero of Marvel. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'll go see it. Obviously, I go see all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I haven't gone to see all of the Sony ones.
No. I don't blame
you. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll check back.
Yeah.
All right. So it's time to wrap up. Anything to say in closing?
Thank you for listening.
Yes, that's a lovely sentiment.
You know, I'm like, why not?
Tell your friends, because we want people to listen and we want to hear feedback.
Yeah.
I know that somebody isn't agreeing with us, thinks we missed out on a point we should have made or got something wrong, or just thinks we're fucking awesome and just really wants to tell us any of those thoughts are acceptable.
Yeah, exactly.
Reach out. You can email us. You can tweet at us. And Rosie was just going to tell you she's doing some writing that you can read.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you want to hear more of my outrageous like theories on Marvel, Fox and Sony's dodgy business dealings or my comic book takes, then I write at Nerdist and I write at Women Write About Comics. And my Twitter is Rosie Marks, M-A-R-X.
Yes. And I do want to hear more about that. my Twitter is at Gynostar, G-Y-N-O-S-T-A-R. You can see my webcomic at gynostar.com. And I have been updating it almost every week.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm trying. So you can reach us both at saucepodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at saucepodcast. We're on iTunes. You can look us up. As I said earlier, you can rate us, write reviews. We really do want to hear some feedback, and we're going to try to bring you a podcast every week. Thanks for listening.
Woo! Bye.
Bye-bye.